Hi, and welcome to the 150th edition of the Keen Minds podcast, where we cover NBC's The Blacklist. This is The Troll Farmer, part 2 and 3. I'm Jen, aka Takata Sayako.
And I am Tessa. I can't believe it's the 150th.
It is. I'm so glad that I keep track of these.
Wow. So this one was written, the first one by Taylor Martin and the second one by Lucas Ryder. How did you like them?
They were so much better than, like we just said last week, Sam's was okay, but the other two I was not fond of. And yeah. So these two were much, much better. I felt like Red felt much more like Red in these episodes, not the doddering old fool that we've had for the past season or so. And there were just some nice twists and turns in it. I liked the Troll Farmer. I'd forgotten how much I liked him. I don't think we really saw as much of him as we did the repercussions of what he was doing back in season 3.
Well, when he thought he was being quoted, I don't know, something, and he was like, Red was doing, he was a fun character. And he did betray Red into it and said that their agreement was over. And Red is like, okay, yeah, now you're going to pay for that.
Well, you don't screw over Raymond Reddington. It's bad life choice. But no, I felt like these episodes felt much more in line with The Blacklist. And yeah.
Most of the characters felt like themselves, yes, instead of some 2.0 version of them.
Oh, I wouldn't call them 2.0. I'd call them other
minus
world.
Two?
Minus 2.0. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, going backwards. I really like them. They felt like the old Blacklist. And I guess in a way it's like, okay, now we see that when Red is actually looking like he's not doing something, there is something he's doing, he just doesn't want anybody else to know about it.
Oh, and before we get too far into this, I have to give Tessa a pat on the back and a, yes, she called it.
Because, oh, yes, thank you.
Because Red was creating that's what he's been doing all season, is creating a fake fake post office.
Said he wanted, he needed a second story. And then the last episode they were talking about the yellow paint, I said, he's doing a second. Of course, I was wrong in what he was going to use it for, but it was a second post office.
I understand from both sides. He actually thought he was doing the task force a favor by protecting,
I think he
them from-
was doing, and I think, well, it will come in the future. We will see that he did.
But this came back to, again, back to, you know, right versus wrong versus somewhere in the middle. Because you have the task force who is law enforcement, and this has been a running theme through The Blacklist. It's been,
they can't do the things he can.
Exactly. And that's why they have him. That's one of the, it's the same reason they used Tom when he was around. You know, it's because, you know, Halcyon and Tom and Red from his end can just get away with certain things while still getting the task force what they need. And that's why this has been such a lucrative relationship over the years, not to mention the fact it's become very personal for several of them. You know, Cooper, who's been around since the beginning, Wrestler, who's been around since the beginning, certainly it was for Liz. And it's, my brain just fritted out.
But it worked. That relationship worked because Red was doing the Red things, and the task force were doing the law enforcement things.
My point was, I got the train back on the track. It actually worked for once.
All right.
My point was that I think Red, from his point of view, very much thought he was doing, because he put a lot of effort into this. It really felt like at the end, like, this was
he
a
did
lot
say
of-
it. Not only did he say it, but
yeah.
He said, you know, I'm protecting you and the task force. And the funny thing is,
my point is, I believe him when he says that. Sometimes he says stuff like that, and I'm like, that's a load of crap, buddy, and you know it. But I did believe him, and he did. He put an exceptional amount of effort into building this fake place so that he, for the lone reason of protecting them. So I really thought they were going to lure them in, and that's the reason he'd been doing this was so that they didn't get into the post office, because it's not like the post office has never been broken into before. Twice. And also, by the way, okay. So I was very excited. The writer, the fan fiction writer in me was super excited and also simultaneously very pissed off we did not get this much earlier on in the series. We finally got the full protocol for entering the post office.
Not for Red, obviously. He must
Well,
have his own
no,
secret
but
agents.
for everybody else that comes
Yeah.
into the post office. So we got to see that there are fingerprints being taken, that there's a full workup being done, the goggles. Because if you remember, Tom
Yeah.
got blindfolded in season one when he was brought in. So they obviously upgraded that whole thing at some point. But there's this whole spiel that you go through, which is fantastic, and that works so well. But I do have a question.
Yes.
If they're that deep below ground, they were several stories below ground, which we've always sort of assumed that they were. How did Red pick up the box by helicopter in season eight?
I don't know that there's several levels, but they're below ground, so the top must be above. I don't know. I mean, that goes even more, and that makes no sense that he would have done that. And then he needed Beano Baker to get Liz and Wrestler out of a zone instead of freaking getting another helicopter.
Yeah, it just I just like I sat there, I went,
Let's not
I
go back into season
simultaneously,
eight.
I was so excited, but then my brain went, but that adds yet another question to season eight that could have been explained if you had just drugged her. It was so simple and it was right there. I
Yeah.
will forever be bitter over this.
Well, the one thing that I found very interesting with this is the way these two episodes, and they work beautifully together. I mean, I watch each one of them this time, like the day after they aired, and then I watched them again today, one after the other. And they were good on their own. When you watch them together, they really shine. And it's very interesting because watch like that, you tend to forget some things. But Wrestler says there is all this information there. You know that what they're after the information, the case files, where the questionable tactics and the problem. And you know very well that that is setting up. Cooper may be getting into a hissy fit with Red. But even Wrestler is saying, if this comes out, we are royally screwed.
Well,
Personally, we are royally screwed. If this case files and the relationship with Reddington ever become known, we are screwed. And
they teetered on that in season four with
with McMahon and
oh, I'm blanking his name. I can picture him. Julius.
Yes,
Julian.
Gail,
Julian Gale.
Julian
Thank you.
Gale.
They teetered on that because they had it all, and I can't for the life of me remember what the designation was, but they had all of these files.
SC something.
Yeah. But they had them all designated. It was everything linked to Red. And so they touched on that. It's not necessarily anything new, but I think that just the longer it goes on, the more that's piled back there, the more that happens, the more that gets swept under the rug. It's more dangerous for all parties involved.
Yeah.
And I mean, but they have come across this before because the task force has been close to being disbanded over different stuff, and it's not necessarily anything new. And so, but it also may have been put on Red's radar without him being able to ignore it, simply because you have Wu Xing hanging out there.
Yeah, well, it's a whole different level of threat.
Yeah, exactly. And is it just me, or was Wuxing's death kind of anticlimactic? I actually had to back it up and go, was that Wuxing that just got shot? Yes, it was.
I liked it because of what Red said. He's a fly.
Yeah.
He's a fly, and he got swatted.
But it felt very much like Red. Just boom, and then He just does that kind of stuff so nonchalantly. And,
same with the other guy. Yeah. He hires this guy, says, "You're a retainer," explain what he does, and says, "I have a relationship with everybody. And this is not that's how I do. And when you break the rules, you get punished. It's either you get punished by me or you get punished by the law enforcement. But whichever way it is, when you break the code, you will suffer the consequences." That's something that he explained to Liz too. And I think that it ended up being like that. Oh, this is killing me. You know, he had hired this. He gave him all that speech and then said, "Oh, what the heck? There you go." It was just like, "The suspense is killing me."
It was a perfect red moment.
Yeah.
Perfect red moment. Yeah. And that's like.
And the fly. He had the fly in the hat. You know, he was just a fly and a bother. And it felt very much like this is the cleaning up. And I suspect that if Red had done this, he had run it before. He had relationship with, I mean, we knew that he had relationship with in MI5 or MI6, because that was during Emma made that clear. And it just seems to me that he had, that cleanup was necessary. And I suspect that program was also used for cleaning up all the other stuff. In a way, it's very interesting what he's doing to me, because it feels that he's covering his tracks. And eventually, he has now separated the task force from him. They're now protected. Now, once Cooper gets out of the hissy fit, he will see that was actually a protective measure. And he's never been very comfortable in the post office ever since Anslow Garrick.
I mean, to be fair, who could blame him? Because it's possible for the post office to be infiltrated. So I very much liked it. I think I enjoyed these episodes more. Again, you had Red acting more like Red, and you also had the writing acting more like the Blacklist. So everything's always going to feel a little bit off without Liz there, but I feel like the pacing and the style was much more in line with the show that we've loved for years. Mm-hmm. Because you had that nice opening with the troll farmer. And so you have Bo setting this guy up, as he does with these social media campaigns that are, you know, fake news campaigns. And the guy shows up, he steals his credentials to be able to steal this program. Mm-hmm. And so you had the bait and switch, which is what the troll farmer is really good at. And then you had the bait and switch at the end. It's that nice mirrored moment with Red at the end with the bait and switch with the post office. And it was just lovely. But I will say,
but you got so many levels of deception.
It was. It was nicely done. It felt like it was well thought out. So for those that listened to last week's, is that when we posted it? A couple weeks ago?
Yeah, last week.
It was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we posted it last week, but episodes was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. But the last episode, we finally just decided, we recorded for three episodes, and then we cut two out of three out because there was just nothing productive being said. It was just ranting.
Well, I like the Dockery affair. Okay. It wasn't that great, but I was not bothered by any.
I was personally offended by
the Perillos part two. So we decided that if you have nothing good to say, we're not going to say it. The world has enough of bad news and bad vibes as it is. But this two really got back to Red as it is. So we know that Red has not been doddering. He's been doing things. He's just been very careful about covering things up. Now, one of the things that was interesting in this episode is the use of Panabaker. Panabaker being on the deception, thinking one thing, she's going to be very pissed. But at the same time, that is protecting her, because each one of her connections with Raymond Reddington have been eliminated.
Yeah.
That protects them all.
And didn't he have something over her for
Yes.
a while?
About it was a file, it was a case. When he helped her with the guy that was supposedly holding her daughter-in-law that turned out to have been hurting her grandchild.
That's right. Yeah, the Munchausen syndrome situation.
Munchausen by proxy.
That's it. But yeah, I'd forgotten exactly what it was. I just remembered that she was compromised. And so, I mean, that's
In
she.
a way, he's blanking their collective souls. He is being a sin eater. He's taking all their sons, all their sins, all the relationship is shrouded in secrecy forever. That's what he told Cooper at the beginning. So he was very, very honest there. And it was interesting because it's back to Red actually says honest things if you actually listen to it and remember what he has said and how he said it and why he said it, even
Well,
especially when you learn the whole thing.
it's red speak, and that's something we haven't really seen a lot of. And my hunch is it's because we've lost Bokenkamp, and Bokenkamp is king of red speak. And so I don't know. It could be because both
But
Taylor, I was
writer
gonna
is
say
one
Taylor
that
and
should be doing
I was gonna
that should
say
be
Taylor's been around since very early on as well. So these
And
two
look, as
both
writer is
have.
a lawyer. If somebody should be able to speak
Oh,
red speak, he's a
is
lawyer.
he? I'm
Yes,
sure
he's
I
a
knew that at
lawyer.
some point.
Yes. He's a lawyer. He was a prosecutor at one point, and then he started writing scripts. Yeah. So he should, if somebody should know red speak, he's definitely a lawyer. One of the most interesting things is that the immunity agreement is also gone, I guess, or he transferred it to a place where he has it and nobody else does. Or maybe he's feeling that he has no need for that anymore. And that's how we set up for having the task force chasing him or some way that this is going to end. We know that at the end we're going to get a big twist. We hope at the end we get a big twist and it will be all worthy of what we've been doing, because every time it's walking in that hall of mirrors when you think you're looking at something and you're really not.
So, speaking of anticipation and all the build up, because that's what we've been doing for, I would say, 7.5 seasons, anticipation and build up, and then it all sort of fell flat in season 8. It was interesting, and Spader was on game in this episode. Like I said, I mean, I've been off with Red for quite a while. Everybody knows this, but I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for Spader's ability to wear red like a hat, essentially. And he's always been very good. Even when I'm angry at Red, Spader's talent shines through. But again, he's just felt doddering and boring this whole season. But we got several epic Red moments in these two episodes, but one of them was the story about Belka in the barn. So his grandmother and the farm and the little goat, and it was an epic story in true Red fashion where the little goat went missing and Red heard her from the barn. I'm sitting there expecting the goat to have wandered into the slaughterhouse. And I think most people probably were, unless I'm just a twisted human being, which is
I
always a
thought I
possibility.
went there exactly the same place.
But
The
then
belt of the
he
one I go.
yeah and so but then he says he talks about all the anticipation and the buildup that led to nothing. Nothing was there. And I just sat there watching this episode, and I remember just sort of jaw drop moment. I went, oh God, please don't let this be a warning that there's nothing at the end of season 10. It's just all of this
It
really
could
meant
be I'm
nothing.
prepared for that. I think that I'm expecting that more than anything else.
He's so
However,
pissed.
I mean, there are things that are there were moments here that gave me again the hope when we get this little throwbacks. Every time that we do that, this is Richard. He delivered Richard Deaver to see ya. that had betrayed her. And it reminded me of doing the same with Navabi and giving him the scimitar, that way he would leave a little gift for someone. And I noticed how so far we've been walking towards the light, because Navabi didn't need much convincing to kill the scimitar. Siya just arrested him.
Siya is a bit younger. She's being painted a bit more naive than I think she really should be, just personally. A couple episodes ago with her flabbergasted, I never would have thought this was, you know, this would happen when, you know, in Perillo's situation. Oh, God,
I'm
terrible.
Blanking Perillo's mishap.
But that was at the end of that episode with her flabbergastedness over it. It was just, it didn't ring true because she's MI5. Like, she knows this kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
But I think they're trying to paint her a bit more naive. She is much younger than everybody else here because they worked with her mother when she was a teenager. I mean, so she is fairly young. I don't know how old the actress is, but I would assume the character is probably mid-20s. And so, I mean, let's say she was 15 when her mother died, maybe younger, you know, that'd put her in her mid-20s. And assuming we're back on schedule with how many years, I have lost count on the timeline. I gave up a long time ago, which.
But still, she managed to do by the book.
Yes.
Within the law, which was an interesting choice to me.
I thought it was
because he called her. He didn't call Cooper. He didn't call anybody. He called her.
Yeah. I thought it was very interesting how she made the comment. I don't remember which episode it was in, but she said, how did my mother deal with this? She was so black and white. And
well,
that's,
maybe it was black and white as a mother.
And
not
I
as
was
going to
say, but we knew Mira, and she was not. She was happy to, you know, what was it? Wrestler induced her in the Freelancer. He said, you know, I'm with the FBI. She's with the CIA and all that.
You know
entails.
The difference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she proved it. So that I thought that was very interesting. And so maybe that's a bit of that naivete that she doesn't realize exactly who her mother was. She didn't understand exactly her mother, which would be an interesting tie back to Liz not understanding exactly who her, I'm just going to say father, because I swear Red's her dad. Like,
where it, or even with Agnes
with
to understand with who Liz really was.
Or even her dad. I mean, because clearly Scotty's not in the picture, which I think is really dumb, but it is what it is. And so she knows nothing really about her father. So she certainly doesn't understand any of that. Maybe Cooper's told her a couple of stories about both parties, but she was relatively young when Liz died. She was a baby when Tom did. But oh my gosh. Okay. As the resident Tom Keen fan, I have to come out here and say this because this is what I do. This is why I'm here. That cooking scene, I enjoyed it from a character perspective in that Red was finally on top of things where he just turned off the video. It was very much a, like, you know, the young generation now who has to film absolutely everything and has to vlog this and put this on Instagram and this on TikTok. And it makes me feel old because I don't get it, but whatever. But it was very much in line with, you know, a, what, 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And him being on the run, essentially, walks up and is like, we're going to turn this off for now. I loved that. It was a very small detail. Like, the scene itself really didn't need to be in the episode, but it was kind of a nice scene just to see Red with that. But what I was going to say,
we did get one thing, and I have a throwback.
Oh, okay.
Just throw it
okay.
in there before you
Go
continue that train of thought. That when Liz goes to the house in Canada, the summer palace, she sees a photo of, she doesn't pay any attention to it, but it was there. She goes for the swing one. There was one of Katerina preparing a cake with her. And it was like a birthday, and it was very much, I like that they go back there. You know, there's a thing of family cooking together that I enjoy very much. So I just wanted to throw that in there that I did see that.
I don't remember that, but that's amazing. I love that. That makes me like the scene even more. But it made me so sad because I know they were doing a callback to Liz not being able to cook, which I was always one of my favorite things.
But Tom did.
But Tom did. And so like all I could think of was if Tom, you know, in this alternate reality that exists in my head, which the Keens are happy and Red's not such an asshole. Like they're living their lives and Agnes is home with her parents. Her dad would be teaching her to cook and maybe
not Liz.
I hate the name Pinky, but Red, you know, would, you know, Grandpa Red would come in and the two of them would bicker together, but they would be able to work together and teach Agnes how to make a cake.
Yeah. Well, Liz, please stay out or burns the kitchen or, I don't know, manages to shoot someone in the time.
She would shoot the cake.
Yeah, probably.
put poison in the cake or something. I don't know.
I don't think we ever saw her cooking anything that wasn't about to burn or it was cold or it was disgusting. It was described as inedible. She burned the pie cakes.
No, she made the pasta.
Yes, that was horrible. And
No. Okay, so the spaghetti was horrible for season one, but in season four, she made pasta. And to be fair, Tom may have been lying through his teeth about it, but he said it was good. And yeah. So, and usually he was fairly honest about that.
He liked it and he knew when to shut up.
He was a good husband. He was.
Well, you know what? It's survival.
That's true. I mean, his wife did shoot him previously, so.
And, you know, you don't know what may happen if you say, honey, this pasta is terrible.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, Liz and cooking, horrible. And clearly her daughter has inherited her horrific cooking experience. Hopefully Red can help alter this.
It feels to me that she's like a mix of the two because at least she's inclined do something.
That's true.
I mean, she obviously needed a little something that wasn't in the recipe, but at least she's trying. I mean, do you honestly
not as a kid? Not as a kid.
At that age?
Did you notice that Agnes referred to Charlene as mom?
No, I did not. But that's good. I mean, it just seems like she's well integrated with her adoptive parents. One thing that was interesting to me in these two episodes was, well, not only we're back to seeing Red and we see that far from daughtering and living in a bathroom and all that, he's actually been building this and he's been ready since the moment he learned of this. But the freelancer escaped one more time.
Can't keep that man down.
And we don't know if Red killed him or not. He just, I mean, we know what he did with Seaver, but we have no idea, Deaver, but we have no idea what he did with the freelancer or if he's going to reappear. It's certainly an interesting choice to leave him alive. I found it interesting, that scene. I wanted to get your take on that, about that shipment and the guy that wouldn't pay because he was an informant. So Ray explained to two people on this episode about that connection. And I mean, is it Red saying the truth? Who is Red lying to? Or is he basically just constructing a bit of lie here and a bit of lie there? Or is that the actual truth? Or is there a truth that exists underneath both what he tells Cooper, what he tells the task force, what he tells his associates? Is there another truth? Are we not seeing the deception in this, in the way? It's like, are we in the real post office or in the fake post office?
So I really liked that scene because, again, this goes back to, and I think that scene was the one that I was looking at and going, this feels like Red. It feels like every time Red has sat down with someone, they think it's a friendly conversation. And by the end of it, he's going, do you want to live or die? Make your choice, you know? And it was that underlying danger that Red has in his very chipper and friendly sort of conversation, in which he just, by the end of it, you're going, what just happened? You know, and it's, you know, the person on the other side of the conversation, and it's brilliant.
And the guy is making units for, you know, affordable units. So Red emphasized, I like what you're doing, and I will like to, and I like helping you do it. But at the end of it, there is a thread. But is what Red described it is, I got relationship with law enforcement. That's how I get that done. I got judges, I got cops, and we have seen his parties.
Well, it's full of freaking cops. I mean, I think judges and everybody. It's the same thing that he said for years now. He's like, I wouldn't be in this if it didn't also benefit me. He's not doing this necessarily out of the goodness of his heart. He does benefit from this. Yeah, he does benefit from this relationship. It's a give and a take. And he doesn't give any more than he's willing to give. For the most part. There were blind spots, like with Liz. Liz was always a blind spot in anything deeply connected to Liz. I think Agnes has the potential to be a blind spot in which he does some really dumb stuff and doesn't learn from his past. But I think it's a bit...
Agnes is not Liz, though. Agnes
I think it's because she has...
She hasn't had that deep trauma. One thing is your mother dying. Well, one thing is your mother dying, and you haven't been kidnapped by a guy who believed he was your grandfather,
but she didn't shoot anybody dying. Because, well, she was...
Or shot anybody.
She was with the babysitter, I think, when Tom died. And she was with the other babysitter when Liz
died. Other babysitter.
And so she didn't actually witness any death in that. She's seen some pretty horrific things.
Or has caused any anybody. Death.
Thanks, Liz. Liz, precious kid.
Somehow she seems to somewhat listen better than Liz, which was one of those things that Liz never quite did well.
Because, I mean, Tom had to be someone that would listen because of his line of work. He had to listen, he had to calculate, and he had to work through things. So I think Agnes probably has a bit of that in her, that she's willing to not always have to be right. She's willing to learn the lesson. Mm-hmm. Like she did... Yeah, like she did.
And listen, and hear.
She didn't. Yeah. She didn't just immediately go, "No, you're wrong, Pinky. Yeah. I'm right." Bar, 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 you know, and
that would have been Liz all throughout. Now we're not going to put
in a cage. There was a bit of flex to it, and which is much more her father than it was her mother.
Mm-hmm. One thing that is interesting to me is the fact that now he has Van Sven, which is a very expensive killer. So I wonder how this is going to work in the future and how we're going to structure this next. Because it seems to me that we're getting like a beginning. Okay, we finished that. Now we're going to get some episodes in between. I don't know what they're going to be, but they probably have something to do with that immunity agreement not being there. And then we're going to get the last four episodes, which are shrouded in mystery.
I'm going to take this moment to, again, praise the story construction in this story versus what we saw when Sven was he introduced there? Had we seen him before?
Yes. Yeah, and he was introduced when Marvin Gerard was there. He was hiring them, and Marvin was having a hissy fit or another.
But that was also season 8, which I hated, so whatever. 9. Oh, God, no, 9.
Season 9.
No, she's been gone 2 seasons.
Oh, yeah, that was 9.
Right. That's right.
No, but no, that's it wasn't about Liz, it was about Red.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, nine I despised. So I don't remember anything. It's nine. Just nothing mm-hmm. much. But compliment I'm trying to give. Has so I was very frustrated when you had Wu Xing and that weird, or Wu Xing's guy, I don't remember his name, his second in command, that went and met with Sven. And you had that weird flashback that I made the comment. I don't remember if it made the cut of the actual podcast, but I said, this is not how you do flashbacks. Like, this was a pointless flashback. You could have easily added that in through dialogue or through conversation rather than look at this flashback. This, you know, it felt very forced in there. Mm-hmm. It did not feel smooth. It was not good. But these two episodes very much used flashbacks in a clever way, in my opinion, because you had that misdirect and then it was explaining the misdirect rather than just a flashback. And so mm-hmm. there was no misdirect in whichever episode we met Sven in the other day. But in these, it was an explanation of that. Yeah. It was very much more in line with the pattern of the Blacklist writing.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that we were fooled because Wrestler and Dembe and everybody is acting their part as if what they're doing is real at every moment. It's only when they get into those rooms that we don't get to see that we saw that they're working for it. And I love that Panna Baker is in that fake post office, and she's also on the thing, and she's like talking about delivering him to the CIA and taking him, and that all the time while she's bullshitting the troll farmer, the troll farmer is bullshitting them, and meanwhile everybody's so being bullshitting.
I have it somewhere in my notes. It's so nice that this wasn't incompetence and just poor character writing. They were actually intentionally doing this. I was so excited to see that because they were competent characters.
Yeah.
And Wrestler, Cooper, I hope Sia, but especially Wrestler and Cooper, who have been doing this for multiple years. They are incredibly competent men. They should not be fooled. When I saw the troll farmer skipping out like he was, I'm like, all escaping. Right. Okay, did nobody know that was coming? Did nobody look like they just left this guy? It was very...
There is one moment you know that is a thing. It's a moment when his farmer is escaping and you see that Wrestler is crossing the corridor and you know that he saw it, but he's doing nothing. I'm like, there you are.
Okay, who maybe not I, seeing I all of to, it. I've gotten so I watch it in the background while I'm working. Like, it sounds terrible. But I just I used to carve out an hour for this episode live, and I like it was so rare that I wouldn't watch these shows live. I would cancel plans to watch show or not make plans on whatever night it was on to watch this show live. And oh, it's gone.
That's gone.
And so I actually missed the Wrestler thing. It was, but
I think it was Wrestler. It could have been, it was somebody who's out there and he crosses as he's just, running back.
He's such seen it. Lazy writing. And I hate the term lazy writing because these are talented writers. So I don't want to like dig at them, but just convenient writing is a much better term. Convenient writing on things. Yeah.
Well, you could have really avoid all the episodes before this and have just one episode.
And it would have been a good season.
And one episode.
They should not have done 22 episodes this season. They could have done this in a much shorter time period. And I think it would have required them to dig into the creativity that I know they have in their repertoire there. And
it would have been better to find a small arc to do instead of trying to drag this one for, 10 episodes? Because it would have been far more if we get the Wu Xing, if we know how Wu Xing escaped, he got the freelancer. You know, with 4 episodes, it would have been more than enough, 4 or 5 episodes. That's probably what we're seeing is just a stretch out where things start to lose.
I also would have liked to have seen Wu Xing. He was a dangerous individual. I would have liked to have seen him feel more dangerous this season too. But He didn't particularly. It's just kind of a bummer.
Well, I think it is again because of the extension. Because if you had seen him going through the list, getting people out of jail, and then trying to approach Red,
and you'd had multiple blacklisters coming at multiple angles at the exact same time, that would have felt like it upped the ante. Yeah.
Yes. Five episodes, very compacted. You see everything. It would have been one thing. So I think that what you're referring to is a stretch out of episodes in which there is no consistency left. And then you have to fill it with a lot of explanation and flashbacks that don't fit and things like that. Whether it could have been a much tighter, but that's the network and the way the networks work, not necessarily on anybody. They could have done an effort. I don't know. Some of the other ones were infuriating. This one was good. I very much liked these two.
And so, for the audience, I got a message from Tessa. She said, I think we should do these two episodes together. They were much better. And I was like, oh, yay. I don't have to dread this watching these episodes. Because, it's been so hit and miss. It's either, oh, these were good. Or, oh, God, I'm going to go find some place to, like, throw my laptop at a lake to cleanse it.
Well, I like that one with the triplet. When Red was being Red, it felt much better.
It's like Red's all we have left. I mean, yes, we have Wrestler, yes, we have Cooper, and we love them dearly, but in Dembe.
They exist as a counterweight to Red's world. And when Red seemed to be all this doddering old guy,
it threw everything
it
off.
It just didn't work. I mean, you and I guess it worked in the sense of, well, now you know that instead of doddering, you've been doing something. You just maybe he's using that as he used to use all his stories as a way.
But the thing is, the stories are interesting. They are a creative. They're a creative character.
This is not
that we like. Doddering old man, pointless. No, please stop that.
Well, we still don't know why he was sending stamps or postcards that were patently fake or didn't express any truth to what he was doing. We have no idea what is beyond that. But at least I have a comfort that two good writers have actually delivered two good episodes. So I feel better. I generally feel better. And it's the whole scheme and the levels of deception. It was great. That's exactly what I'm looking for. I don't want to know where I'm standing. And even when I guess one part of this, that he was making a post office, I did not guess what he was going to use it for. So that is why I like the show. Because even though I don't get them all, ever.
When he said, this is why I've been creating this post office, and they're walking in and awestruck by it, I went, oh, this is why he's been creating the post office. And I took it like bait. And I followed the bait like a fish in the ocean. And so when it flipped, I was happy that they could finally pull. Like, because I enjoy that. Just like you were saying, like, I am not, because I'm like, oh, I love to be a fool, but like, it means you're clever. It means you're clever if you're able to fool me.
It was one point where I started thinking, this is not all of it, which is when Chang comes back to the post office and Red is there. And I'm like, this is weird.
Oh, it was just very stuck in my head. This is something really well shot. It kind of felt like something out of one of those really bizarre horror flicks in which you see that thing that's well out of the space and it just doesn't fit at all. Yeah. And you're like, it feels like it's part of a dream or something like that. It was shot like that. It was very bizarre. And now we know why. It's because it was sort of the jumping off point for here is where the deception begins.
Mm-hmm. And the whole plan was well coordinated in order to get Red into those files. And I find it interesting that he didn't delete them. He just erased all references to himself. And I think that when the show ends, we're going to see that Red was indeed protecting them.
I mean, like, I understand why they're, you know.
And he protects Agnes among all people. Because connection between Red and Cooper and
we almost saw Cooper going to prison. You know, he doesn't want a repeat of that, you know, for something that he covered up. I mean, Cooper has bent some rules over the years for Red.
Yeah, well, we saw that he started bending rules, and then he did a bit of that boomerang that Wrestler was so keen on. Of going all the way to the other side. And of course, Wrestler by now has, I think that he has made peace with the grayness in him. And he's not pretending to be holier than thou anymore.
I think so. I mean, for the most part. And I think he's just
he does have his moments.
Broken man at this point. I think he finally bent until he broke. And
well, you know what? I don't think so. And this is going to be a controversial
opinion. You never give controversial opinions.
I think never, especially when it comes to wrestler. But I was right when I described it as a rubber banding.
Oh, no, that's an amazing analogy for it.
I think that wrestler was broken before.
Oh, 100% agree. I mean, just look at what happened with his father's.
I mean, and what he did then to his brother, and the way he just like make himself be holier than thou, and it was actually the other way around.
I think his coping mechanisms are very unhealthy.
I think they that are his. He has healed. Far from wrestler becoming imperfect, which is what he feels now. He feels that he has gone back and gone down and accepted kind of this broken things. What he has done is come to terms and accept what Red told him. We don't look at the past in order to swallow in it all the time. Like he told that to Cooper as well. We do it in order to bury it and let it go. And I think that Wrestler has gone from this broken, basically just empty shelf of this perfect guy. And it, when nothing was right, the way he lost Audrey because of an obsession, the way he got obsessed with things, that going by the rules that was pathological until it was not like by the rules for him, that was a very broken, empty man. And I think that what Wrestler has done is actually healed. By going into this darkness, he has been able to face who he was, and he has emerged actually a normal, healthier version of Wrestler. I know that you're saying no and you're going crazy, but mark my words, we're going there.
I do think he's probably somewhat better, maybe more.
He's real.
I think he's accepted things. So I partially agree with you, but I think we disagree on the reason he's done it. So there's been some complaints, and I totally understand because I get very frustrated. I love the parallels that we've had through the Blacklist, but there are also points, and it's very difficult to tell the difference. Like, it can be from the outside, you know, to tell the difference between the really intricate parallels that we have through the Blacklist and the repeat stories, where you're like, okay, we've done this before like 15 times, we're done. And there have been some complaints about the repeat of the AA meetings and the drug addiction, et cetera, et cetera. Like, oh, he's been through this, he kicked it, let's go ahead. Let's move past this. And what's interesting is that he didn't stick with the AA meetings previously. Like, it's he kicked the drug habit and then it was just gone. It didn't stick with him. He didn't seem to struggle with it. He didn't seem to struggle with it. He just moved past it. He got out of AA meetings, moved on with his life, and continued to do the same rubber banding that he always did. So I think Wrestler has an addictive personality in which he just finds other things to be addicted to. If it's not
See,
the
or
Oxy or whatever it was,
he
hey,
was
hang on,
chasing Renton first. That was his first addiction.
Yeah, it was. Oh, I agree. Yes, 100% agree with that. And I think that he doesn't always realize that he's fixated on something, but he's still well over a year after Liz has been dead, after his relapse and all of this, he is still regularly attending his AA meetings. I think there actually is a point to them showing that he's still doing that and that he is handling this. I struggle to call it a healthy coping because I still think he wants to murder Red in his sleep. I think given the chance he might do it, but I think he has, as you said, accepted himself more. I think he's accepted that feeling, that loathing he has for Red, where he might not have before. We saw back in season one when he was shot, but he was still, he said, I still have to protect Red because that's my job, this and that. Like, he was so hyper focused on that, like, this is my job, that he just kind of kicked everything else out. And I think it pretended that the feelings were
Well,
not
I think
there.
he's gone
And so
one step
I
up
think he's come.
from there.
I think in a way it's a healthier way. Like, he has accepted it. I'm not going to say it's healthy that he wants to
Well,
murder Red, but I do think
I
he has
think
accepted
that
it.
is his next step, which is, I don't say that Red is blameless in what happened to Liz, but I would not say that the entire fault belongs with him. Liz was
Well,
a person.
she went crazy in season eight because the writers
Well,
let her
but
go crazy. Like, that was so
no.
beyond.
There is much there that was predicted to happen from the very beginning. Liz was dark. Liz had a predisposition to violence that was very, very baked in. It's not normal for a child that if you tell me, well, this is a child who have witnessed violence every day of her life, and she doesn't know whether her mom is going to end up in a hospital or whatever. I get it. That's a normal reaction of anyone trying to avoid that situation. This is something that have happened for the first time in her life, okay? That she's seeing her mom and her dad having a fight. And it's not normal for a four-year-old child to get a gun and try and pointed at the father to kill him. It's
I still say that 4-year-olds do not have the coordination to be able to
well,
do that
I'm sure
without
that
having
that
the, like,
happened or that or that's but
I was gonna say, like, I'm from
yeah
Texas.
but
Like, there are children that are raised from a relatively young age around firearms, so
forget
that
about
if there are
having able
firearms
to
in the
do
house,
it. It
you
could
have
have
to
been a
train.
pot shot.
But I'm just
But
saying,
the point is, she got
like
the gun.
one of those parents taught her way too
She
young,
got the gun
is my
and she
point.
had that impulse. She had the impulse to get out of the
Yeah.
closet when she was told to stay there. Liz had a unhealth,
Yeah, that's a
unhealth
kid.
unhealthy obsession with the past and a narcissistic personality that I'm not sure it started with what happened to her. I think that as opposed to what we're seeing, what we saw, for example, with Tom. Tom was one character that something happened to him, and we don't know that he was any different other than being Scotty's son and Howard's. So there is something there for genetics there. But in Liz, it seems like
Yeah,
the
good luck to
darkness
him.
was,
Well, I mean, that could have also been part of King Katarina's daughter. I
Yeah,
mean,
but what I'm saying,
there, and that goes back to something we've dealt with a little long
DNA
time.
versus
Dealt with,
choice.
it's nature
And I
versus
think
nurture.
that from the very beginning, Liz had a I'm not sure that what read that was done by telling her a bunch of lies from the very beginning, and all and overall we can trace most of probably what Liz had as a result of having her memories erased, because that's like anything else. If you don't know what you have done, you cannot deal with it. And that comes from an adult or a child. Everybody has to deal with the things. And when you can't remember, all you have this vague notion that you did something really bad, or that you didn't, or you tried to compensate somehow. So I think that even though it was done with the best intentions and probably not thinking of anything at the time, I think that the reason why most of the stuff happened, with Liz is an innate darkness and a compound problem into that. Agnes doesn't seem to have that. But when you go to
But
Wrestler,
that could be
yeah,
a bit of the balance between the Hargrave and
but
the
we were talking
Gustav.
about Wrestler and we got in here because I was trying to make a connection into what happens to Wrestler. He's going to one day have to admit that, sure, Red does bear responsibility, but it's not all Red. That Liz had his way of doing things and his way of and her way of reacting that.
Well, I was gonna say that the way he still, especially in that scenario you just said, that actually puts me back to Wrestler's very black and white sort of view of the world that he's had, that he reprimands back to. That, okay, one person has to have all of the fault here. And it's interesting because, like, in the fandom, you saw a bunch of Wrestler fans have that when it came to Tom. That, like, oh, well, it had to either be all Tom's fault or all Liz's fault, and we're gonna choose it's all Tom's fault. And because we love Liz and Wrestler together. Or, I guess Lizington's probably were in on that too. But you especially saw it with Wrestler fans because that tends to be, you tend to be drawn towards people that you identify with, which I don't know what that means that I'm drawn to
No,
Tom, but
I don't want to discuss that part.
we're not gonna get into that. With Wrestler on the black and white sort of situation, it's like it's all Red's fault or all
That's the
Liz's
last
fault, so he's
frontier
gonna choose
of
all.
him becoming a more a less cartoonish, yeah, and a
Balanced
less
human being.
cartoonish flat, like everything is black and white, or everything is my fortune, or either I'm doing drugs and waking up naked and vomiting in somebody's floor, or I'm following by the rules and becoming an insufferable know-it-all. So
Wrestler just has no
there is a
chill. That's
bit
really what
of,
it boils down to. Wrestler has
well,
no chill.
but I think he's getting there. I think he's getting there,
He
and
is. He's growing up. At like 45 years old,
Like
he's
a
growing up.
Cooper will go back and he has done this too. I think they all have done it in one way. And I think that Red was forced into this life by trying to protect Liz. And he, as he said, we do it for real, we don't do it at all.
I think it's also very easy, especially from the task force's point of view. It's that old Star Wars quote from a certain point of view. And from the task force's point of view, once they got past, okay, this woman, Raymond Reddington has turned himself in and will only speak to Elizabeth Keane. Is Elizabeth Keane a bad person? Once they sort of vetted her and felt like they could trust her, then suddenly it was their chips were on her side. I don't know if that's the right reference there, but I don't play poker. But they were all in on Liz, sort of thing. And so I think that they and people do that. I mean, think about like a breakup or something. The you know if you're friends with one partner versus the other, then you're going to just instinctively take one side unless you're just a very
I
uniquely
am that
wired human
uniquely
being.
wired person.
I was gonna say I said that because I figured you probably are that person. But in general, most people
tend to go with one, like, tend to go with the emotions instead of seeing what it is. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think that as the Blacklist ends, I hope that we see what is that Red is doing. I hope we go back to Red having a purpose higher than himself, because if it were just to protect Liz, he's really not protecting Agnes. So what the heck is he doing?
He needs to have that higher purpose for the show to have
to be really watchable, does. Even rewatchable. Because the way Nakalo did is I call it the corrosive effect of Nakalo. And I always go back to the Arcane Wireless, one of the few episodes of season 9 that I liked, because it was an undercover guy who became a criminal and was working with criminals, all to give them these phones that were supposed to be tracked. So I'm hoping that somehow in there we go back and we hear about this work that Red is doing and all that. Criminal, that he liked being a criminal. I think he found himself that he was rather good at it, but he also has expressed that he loses a part of himself, or that he's, you know, living a lie. So I'm more hopeful now that we might get to have a ending that will make the show watchable again. I think it would be
I really hope so, because, like, I don't remember what it was. I got struck with something. I think I heard a song that was on I keep writing playlists. Like, all of my music playlists, and I have vast numbers of them, are all writing playlists. So I have them by characters and by stories that I've written over the years. And so I have many for the Blacklist. And I think it was a song I heard the other day that was on one of my mini Blacklist playlists. And it just struck me with this utter Blacklist mood. Or maybe it was after watching these shows. I don't remember, but something struck me with a huge Blacklist mood, which with any other show, I would have gone, I'm going to go back and do some rewatches, because this was an amazing show once upon a time. Even shows that I hated how they ended, I usually can go back to earlier seasons
and enjoy them
and still love
but not
that.
when they have Nakala reduce everything to pointless and dislikable characters and stupid.
I was gonna say this to boot. To be fair, part of it with the Blacklist, I think, is how much emotional investment I've put into it. I mean, this is 10 years, I guess 9 years for me, because I started in like season 2, and so like 8.5-9 years of deep emotional investment in this show. It's a lot. And so I really hope that I can go back and at least enjoy, you know, seasons 1 through 3, maybe 1 through 4, and
just enjoy those
moments.
You know, I won't say that I'm hoping, but let's say that the possibilities increased just a tiny little bit. Do you have anything else on these episodes?
So the only thing I really have at the tail end, it's just a funny little bit. I've sort of touched on this. we were talking about, you know, how Red set up the whole bait and switch thing, or not really bait and switch. Well, I guess it was bait and switch with the two post office. I have in here, I said Cooper told Red that he couldn't let him murder Rujing. Was very, you know, steadfast on this. I cannot allow you to murder these Blacklisters. I cannot be, you know, I cannot abide by this. I cannot do this. And so Red not only did it, but he did it in Cooper's own war room. Rude. How rude.
Well, I mean,
like, he may have done it to save
Cooper's life. Let me put it this way. In Red's defense, Red delivered Wu Jing to be arrested, and what did the government did? He escaped. So you can say that they got their chance to get it right.
Fool me once, shame on you.
It's
fool
your
me
shot.
Twice. Guess you're a dead
you
man.
Know, you may go to jail.
You're
once.
A dead man.
Okay, the troll farmer got out on his own. That's a good job. Now you're free. You can go. The other guys, I don't know, guys, go. But now the troll farmer has his bona fides as a criminal restored. He's now again a good criminal. So he's got jobs.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all I got. I hope that the next arc is an interesting one.
Here's hoping. Here's hoping. And so until next time, guys, you can listen to us on Spotify, on iTunes, and SoundCloud. And you can talk to us on, we're on Tumblr, we're on Facebook, and Tess is on Reddit
Yeah,
every
every
once in
once
a
in a while,
while.
not as much as I was before.
Yeah, I have a Reddit. So if you see Takata Sayako over on Reddit, that's probably me. The likelihood of me actually responding
Zero.
is like 0.5%.
Okay,
I give a
that's
little bit.
good.
I have responded
That's
to one
good.
person. I responded to one person one time
That's an
on Reddit.
improvement.
It's been my entire Reddit experience. I spend very little
All
time
right,
over
guys,
there.
so until next time.
Until
Bye.
next time, bye-bye.